Hi there, friends. This is your Broadway buddy, Ben Cameron, and you are listening to Playbill Presents The Broadway Cast.
The Broadway Cast is a weekly podcast that brings the pages of Playbill to life and delivers it directly to theater fans around the world. Every episode will feature Broadway news and exclusive stories from the most notable Broadway personalities. Additionally, the Broadway Cast will give a voice to fans like they've never had before.
Today, we speak to Tony winners all, Jason Robert Brown, Lilias White, and Michael McGraw. But before we get into all the Tony goodness, we must check in on the Playbill Pulse. And here to take us through it is senior features editor from Playbill, Ruthie Fierberg.
Hi, Ben.
Ruthie, can you believe it is our season finale?
I can't believe it. We've made it through 10 episodes. It feels good.
This has got to be a big one.
One of the most exciting things is that the Once on This Island revival has found its Timon. Hayley Kilgore, they released this amazing video of her finding out that she got the role because they did one of those international castings. They went to Haiti to see if they could find someone. This girl, Hayley, is from the United States, but her reaction is priceless. When director Michael Arden tells her that she got the role, she just walks out of the room.
She does?
Yes, in complete shock. It's really a beautiful moment. So getting very excited for that revival come fall. We have a couple of other Broadway debuts from some more established actors. Joshua Jackson and Lauren Ridloff are coming in Children of a Lesser God, which some people may know is the movie that Marley Matlin won her Oscar for.
Yep.
That's going to come to Studio 54 in March of 2018 with an official opening April.
Okay.
Of course, there's always Hamilton news, Ben. It's not a week without Hamilton news.
Give me the ham.
All right. It opened in LA, and we got some live ham for ham.
They brought it back.
Exactly. I mean, is it more momentous that it's in LA or more momentous that we all got to live in the love of ham for ham? I'm going to go digital on this one.
It's momentous anyway. You slice it. Let's be honest.
It really is. It's Hamilton. In other news, Rachel Bay Jones just joined our lineup for Playbill's Broadway on the Danube River with Michael Feinstein.
I want to go to there.
So exciting. Her performance in Dear Evan Hansen,
it's amazing.
Speaks for itself. She won a Tony, so we're thrilled to welcome her on board the boat. There's also news in the television crossover world. So Falsettos arrived on Broadway HD last week.
Yeah.
So you can stream that if you are a Broadway HD subscriber.
And you should be.
And you should be. I mean, more Broadway is what we all want, right?
More Broadway is more.
I think that's the right math.
Safe to say.
Safe to say. And then we have Broadway coming to the big screen. Holiday Inn, which was one of Broadway HD's titles, is actually going to be in movie theaters come November because it's Holiday Inn. So, of course.
For the holidays.
Exactly. Happy holidays. In international news, Evita is doing its 40th anniversary international tour. It is kicking off in South Africa in the fall. But this just in, Hal Prince says he is committed to bringing it back to Broadway. The original, I mean, it's Larry Fuller is choreographing and we have the original design team working on it. So they want to bring it back the way it was. All we're missing is Patti LuPone.
Will she revive it?
I mean...
Will she come back?
I don't know. She said that War Paint's her last musical, so... What are you going to do?
Talk to me about Back to School Week.
So today
on Playbill.com
kicks off our Back to School Week.
Okay.
Playbill EDU, for those of you who don't know, is an amazing resource. Playbilledu.com. So don't get confused. But it's this amazing database that can guide you through the college application process if you're looking to pursue the performing arts. And this week we have content coming out of our ears with all sorts of advice about how to best pay for college, how to apply for financial aid, whether you should go to a liberal arts college or conservatory, advice from Broadway stars. It is all there. So definitely check in for our Back to School Week content.
So make sure you check that out on Playbill.com. And if you want to catch up on everything Playbill presents the Broadway cast, you can go to Playbill.com/the Broadway cast.
And while you're over on Playbill.com, you should check out, we had this fantastic event last week with the cast of Bandstand, Laura Osnes, Corey Cott, the entire Donnie Nova band at Downtown Subculture. They did an exclusive performance and then a panel discussion with us all about backstage secrets, how they learned to play their instruments, the wonderful stories of the veterans they've been meeting. It's really incredible. So go to Playbill.com and check out that live stream.
And now let's get on with, drumroll please, our season one finale show.
Give my regards to Broadway. Remember.
A lullaby of Broadway.
But
There's a kid in the middle of nowhere who's sitting there living for Tony performances, singing and flipping along with the Pippins and Wickets and Kinkies, Matildas and Mormonses. So we might reassure that kid and do something to spur that kid. Because I promise you, all of us up here tonight, we were that kid and now we're big.
My friends, we have done it. It's our great, big, beautiful season finale. And what better way to close out our debut season than with a panel of, dare I say it, legendary Tony Award winning stars. Let's start right here to my immediate left. I can't quite believe that I'm sitting next to you, sir, because I am such a giant fan of yours. You know this gentleman for his work in Urban Cowboy, Songs for a New
Nobody
World.
Nobody knows
Hollywood
me for
Vegas.
My work in Urban Cowboy.
Yeah, you contributed music to Urban Cowboy. We call it work?
Go on. Oh, it was work.
Was it so much work?
Sure.
Yeah. He's the composer of Bridges of Madison County. He won a Tony for that. And the masterpiece that is Parade 13, to name just a few, currently represented on Broadway with Hal Prince homage, Prince of Broadway, Jason Robert Brown is here.
Yay.
Let's all clap for that. That's huge. So happy to have you here on the Broadway cast.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the experience now working with Hal Prince again, working on other people's music as an arranger.
I had done music supervisor work before on Urban Cowboy, for example. But, I'd done that kind of thing. But I've got things to write and things that I want to express with my writing. So I wouldn't ordinarily do it. But Hal call and he said, we're putting together this thing that's a celebration of my work and really a celebration of what the musical theater is. And, when he asked me to do it, all I could think is I get to get my hands on all the greatest scores of the 20th century in the musical theater. All the stuff that I wanted to do when I came to New York, mm-hmm. I get to put my hands on it. I get to put my hands on West Side Story and Fiddler on the Roof and Sweeney Todd and, Phantom of the Opera. And I get to put my hands on it and make it all just cohere. I'm there to represent Steve Sondheim, and I'm there to represent Andrew Lloyd Webber, and I'm there to represent Leonard Bernstein and Jerry Bach and all these people who have meant so much to me, and all in the service of Hal, who has meant my entire career, my mm-hmm. entire life. And so it's really hard work. And there are people, I think, who like doing that sort of thing more than I do. But I loved getting to be in the room and be part of it. I said to my wife a couple of weeks ago, I'm not sure that I was the best person to do this job, but if anybody else had done it, I would have been really mad. It felt like I should be there. And so I'm very proud of it.
How many tunes make up the overture in
There used to be 22, but I think by the time we got to opening night, I think it's 17.
That's a lot of songs.
That's a lot of songs.
It was a lot. That's a lot of songs to arrange and put together.
And 22, it was a really long overture.
Yeah.
Believe me, it was good when we got rid of those five.
Okay, seated right next to Jason Robert Brown, she is the Tony Award-winning star of The Life. She's appeared on Broadway in Cat as Grisabella,
yes.
Which I didn't know that till very recently.
Really?
I'm thrilled about it.
I sang Memory My Way.
Can you give us just a little bit of how that sounded?
Oh, God. Right now?
I mean, here we are.
Touch me. It's so easy to leave me. All alone with the memory of my days in the sun.
I knew there had to be a sun.
How many syllables are in sun? She's also appeared on Once on This Island, Carrie, Chicago, How to Succeed in Business, which, come on, I could listen to that all day. And that's just the beginning. Lilias White is here.
Hi.
Holy moly.
Hi, everybody.
Rounding out our panel, he received a Tony Award playing Cookie McGee in Nice Work If You Can Get It. Tony nominated for his work in Spamalot and appeared on Broadway in Memphis, My Favorite Year, Swinging on a Star, Little Me, played Moonface Martin in Anything Goes. This is Michael McGraw.
Yay! Yay!
Michael McGraw just finished
The Government Inspector,
mm-hmm. and you're taking a little break before mm-hmm. you start up on The Honeymooners.
Yes. The Honeymooners, yeah. The Honeymooners musical.
And is this a project you've been
I've been working on it for about 5 years. Actually, when I won the Tony for Nice Work is when I first sort of dropped the little hint that that it was going to happen. I thanked my wife and said, baby, you're the greatest. And then it was, is that happening? Is it happening?
Everything.
Is it happening?
Yeah.
So it's been happening since then, but it takes a long time. So we're going to do it at the Paper Mill Playhouse.
At the Paper Mill Playhouse.
This fall. And hopefully we get that little boost that's going to get us a little house in New York City.
On the big Broadway.
Yeah.
I feel confident.
Yeah.
You have an incredible cast.
Great cast. Leslie Kritzer is doing Alice Cramden. Laura Bell Bundy is doing Trixie.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Mastro is playing Norton. And I'm playing Ralph Cramden.
Big, my friends. All right. Here at the Broadway Cast, we like to have a little bit of fun at the beginning of our show. So we're going to play a quick round.
Too late.
Huh? I know. We're going to play a quick round of Name That Tony Winner. Uh-huh. It's very easy. I've compiled some sound clips of classic Tony Award winners. We're going to do this in three categories, beginning with actors and actresses. We'll move on to composers and then into productions. Are you ready to play?
I'm not going to play seriously, so yes, sure, go ahead.
Okay, great. Ready? First clue.
For I got a goal again. I've got a drive again.
Michael McGraw.
Carol Channing.
That is Carol Channing in the Hello Dolly. Very well done. You have 13 points now.
I'll take state capitals for 500.
Fantastic.
Congratulations, Michael.
Here's your next clue.
Will justice be demanded?
Oh, Carol Channing.
Yes.
Why Seth Mitchell?
Carol Channing's never sounded better.
Listen, her voice gained richness as she aged.
Next up.
When you hold the
Flies, Minnelli. Fleur of the Red Menace. But we actually have that song in the overture for Prince of Broadway, which I made sure we put in because that was Hal was the producer on Fleur of the Red Menace, but then also the reason he met Susan Stroman is because Susan and David Thompson and Scott Ellis worked on a revival of Fleur of the Red Menace many years after the original production, which, according to Hal, was sensational and was they fixed the problems of the show. And so Hal went to see that, and that's when he first saw Susan's work. And so he said, I want to work with her from the, you know, and that's when their collaboration started, was because of that. So I made sure it was in the overture.
That's a beautiful song, too, isn't it?
Oh, it's a killer.
All right, here we go.
It's Bob Goulet.
Camelot.
Very well done. You all have 15 points. Moving on now.
How did that happen? I got two of them. This point system is
Mean nothing. All right. That's Name That Tony Winner. You were all magnificent.
That was a miserable experience.
Let's start at the very beginning, my Tony Award winning friends.
Yes.
I would like to know from you what your earliest inspirations were as you saw something on stage and you said, I think I want to be part of that. Jason Robert Brown?
Leonard Bernstein. My dad and mom had the cast album for West Side Story, and I used to just go through my dad's record collection all the time anyway and just pull out anything, whatever, Dave Brubeck records or, you know, whatever. But I saw that West Side Story album, and I took it out, and I put the needle down on it because there were still needles. And I just listened to it, and then I went to the library, and I got the script, and I sat, and I would read the script and then put the needle down when the part of the script came. And that was, you know, I can't think of how I would be who I am if I hadn't spent all that time listening to West Side Story. I mean, there's obviously a lot of very important stuff that came up in my life afterwards, but if you talk about first inspiration, I'm pretty sure the reason I do what I do is because of West Side Story.
When do you remember writing your first piece of music? How old were you?
Oh, I insisted that my parents get a piano. My grandfather happened to have one in his basement. He was a hoarder. And so they pulled it up and they brought it into our living room. And I think I was 7 or 8 years old, and I started writing things immediately. You know, they were terrible, but I started writing the minute that I sat in front of a piano because I thought, oh, I could just write my own things. I can't play anybody else's, but I'll go write mine. And that's basically still how it works.
Lily's Swipe.
West Side Story was a big part of my life. My mother. We didn't go to Broadway shows a lot, but she brought me every show tune album that she got her hands on.
And so you're from New York,
I'm from Brooklyn, yeah. And so I grew up listening to Annie Get Your Gun, and I would sing all the parts. Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than new.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
I did everything. I sang West Side Story. I sang Maria, everything. West Side Story and Annie Get Your Gun, My Fair Lady. I had all these show tune albums, and we had albums then, right?
Yeah.
And I had 45s. My mother would give me a little bit of allowance on the weekends, and I went and got 45s. So I had 45s of every Motown, every hit song, the A and B sides, and I'd be in my living room with my aunt said it was a hairbrush. And sometimes I had a spoon, and I had another aunt who used to make wigs, and I'd get my wigs, and I'd turn them around for each character. You know, ooh, baby love, my baby love. I was just singing all the time, and a dancer.
Yeah?
I was very heavily into dance. I had my Aunt Lilius, who I'm named after, was a dancer with the June Taylor Dance Company that was on the Jackie Gleason Show.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so Aunt Lil always had tutus and top hats and tap shoes, and she encouraged me, and she was into it until she got married. And back then, when you got married, you stopped showbiz a lot of times. So she stopped that. But she would always, when I was little, they'd put me up on my grandmother's dining room table after the homemade deliciousness that my grandmother made. And I would sing and dance for my family. And so that was, you know, my start, my inspiration. I didn't know I was going to end up in the theater. I knew I was going to be on stage, but I thought it was going to be in just music and dance.
Michael McGraw, what was your earliest inspiration?
I think I grew up in Worcester, Massachusetts, so we never got to, I didn't see a Broadway show until I was in my 20, 21, something like that. I think it was The Wiz was the first
that was
Broadway
my
show.
First Broadway
was
show?
It really?
Wow. Really?
And for me, it was through TV. And as a kid, Sunday nights were always The Sullivan Show. And in those days, probably early 60s, as far back as I can remember, you know, The Sullivan Show, he had Broadway shows on with almost the entire cast. Mm-hmm. And they would the segments would last 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would do 10 minutes of a number. And all the big stars did it. You know, you had Burton and Julie Andrews doing a scene from Camelot, and they would do a scene and the song. So for me, that was me sitting in front of a TV, you know, just starry-eyed and wondering what it would be like to be one of those people in the ensemble, though, you know, dancing around and having fun and looking like you're having the best time of your life.
Yeah.
And then Saturdays was the Jackie Gleason show, mm-hmm, from Miami Beach, which I never missed. And that was a variety show at its height, with the June Taylor dancers and the sketches and the comics. And that was what made me really, really want to get into doing it, because the next day you would imitate what you saw,
right?
You know, mm-hmm, on TV, yeah, you know, Crazy Guggenheim and and the June Taylor dancers doing the big numbers with the overhead shot with the legs going everywhere. And that's what made me sort of every day want to imitate what I saw. And funny, actually, I got to work with Mercedes Ellington, you know, doing a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum at the Muni. This was years ago. And I was playing Soodless, and we were doing one of the numbers with the girls, and they were screwing up somehow. And I, you know, as Soodless, I said, "My God, can you girls get it right? June Taylor would be turning over in her grave right now if she." And so Mercedes on the break says to me, "Michael, June Taylor is not dead." I was like, "She is. Yes, she is." She goes, "I'm telling you, June Taylor is not dead." Now, Mercedes was a June Taylor dancer at one time herself.
Yeah.
So we had this little back and forth for a couple of seconds. We went back to in rehearsal, and we did another, you know, hour and a half. We took our break, and Mercedes, sitting at the desk, says, "Michael, I have a phone call for you." And I had forgotten. I had completely forgotten what had just happened.
Yeah.
So I picked up the phone, and I went, "Hello?" And she went, "Hello, Michael, this is June Taylor, and I'm very much alive."
Oh, wow.
And, oh, what was your response to
that? It was hilarious. I just laughed out loud. She started laughing, and you know, it was really funny. But so that's my June Taylor.
What were your, when you were young, what were your first, like, roles in theater?
I played a secretary in it was a junior high school. We used to have sing. We had junior sing, senior sing, sophomore sing, and they'd put together a show, and they would take the current Broadway music and put different words to it and truncate it. So I played some secretary, and I had to sing the song, da 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 dee da da dee da 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 dee 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 da dee 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 ba dee 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 da 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 da. That was a miracle. I don't know what this
miracle.
Honey, I didn't know what it was, but I was singing it. I sang it, and they liked me. And, you know, I did well. And so that was my first memory of doing a show. on the stage and for, in terms of a big production number. But when I
that's
was in
a powerful thing when you realize elementary that they school. Like you, right?
Yeah, yeah, they liked me.
Yeah.
But in elementary school, I was always picked to announce the May Day dancers. You know, this is 5-1, class 5-1 doing the hotchkotch polka. Class 2-2 is doing this, the skip to Maloo, whatever it was. And so they knew that I could speak well and I projected. Mm. So, you know, they gave me those little gigs to do.
How about you, Michael?
For me, it was the typical ingenue roles when I was first starting out. 8-0 Annie. And no, I actually played Will Parker for about 5 years from 1980 to about 1985. It was
your wheelhouse.
I was all over the place, all over the country doing Will Parker. And but then I was doing Forbidden Broadway in Boston at that time, too. So I got to do all those other parts, you know. Just with parody lyrics, but you know, I could play the Phantom of the Opera. I played Cameron McIntosh as the Phantom of the Opera and M. Butterfly, and just
God, I love that.
I'm M. Butterfly. I'm a Chinese spy dressed in a dress. It was you know, but I was a character man more than I was a young leading man. You know what I mean? I really wasn't right as Will Parker.
Did you have a sense of that at a young age?
Yeah, I did in a way because. Those characters, the Will Parker characters, they're not as funny as I knew I was supposed to be. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
The secondary role is a little more straight, and a little, not as straight as the leading man, but not Ally Hackim. And I should have been Ally Hackim, but I didn't have that physical depth yet that I now have. So I had to grow into my character roles. And it took a little while, but that's where I knew eventually I was going to land.
I remember going to Radio City. We went to Radio City Music Hall twice a year. We went to see the Easter show and the Christmas show. My mother would take us every year, twice a year. We went to see that. When I got to my teens, I was out partying. You know, I was wrapping up long scarves and long, you know, maxi coats and going out in the snow to go to the party. I wasn't watching the Tony Awards. But I do remember specifically going to Radio City Music Hall. And the most fun memory that I have of that is in the wintertime. My mother would take my brothers and I and we'd get all bundled up and to the point where, you know, you couldn't hardly move. And she'd pack peanut butter jelly sandwiches and thermoses full of hot chocolate. Mm. And there was no Ticketron. Or anything like that. So if you wanted tickets, you had to wait online at Radio City Music Hall. So we get there really early, and we wait, having our little peanut butter jelly sandwiches and our hot chocolate in the cold. And my mother would, when they opened the box office, we'd be there, and my mother would get the tickets, and we'd go, and we'd be in the second row at Radio City. Yeah. And we'd see the Christmas show with all the animals going by, Rockettes, and the Santa Claus. Yeah. We were right there. Mm-hmm. So those are my fondest memories of seeing live theater.
Yeah.
It was Radio City Music Hall.
Michael?
In my house, where growing up again, we watched all of the award shows. My mother loved the award shows because she used to love to watch what the people would wear and live vicariously through them. So I know I watched Tony Awards, and definitely we watched the Academy Awards. In the 90s, early 90s, I used to throw a Tony party. In my apartment, you know, and we'd vote.
You'd ballots. You'd
have a little ballots and everything else.
I remember I used to have to sneak out of my, I'm from Utah, and I had to sneak out of my house on Sundays because I was raised Mormon. And we couldn't watch TV on Sundays.
Right.
Well, that's when the Tonys happen. And I would have to sneak out of my house to watch the Tony Awards.
Oh, right, of course.
And that was like a religious experience for me. So tell me about the road to Broadway for you, coming from first realizing that people like this, people want to hear my music, and what was the experience of getting to the Broadway stage, and how much did that mean to you?
It was a natural progression of, it's what I wanted to do when I got out of high school. I went to the Boston Conservatory for about 3 months. And
I don't know anyone who graduated from there. I know a lot of people who started at the Boston Conservatory. And then
I'll bet you're still in the literature.
My wife graduated from there. But I left and auditioned for summer stock that particular year. I got an offer to do a season of stock at Theater by the Sea in Matunuck, Rhode Island. I was in the ensemble of all the shows. The last show of the season was Robber Bridegroom, which had just closed on Broadway. Mary Porter Hall was the production stage manager in New York.
I know her.
You remember her, right?
Yeah, she told me I gave her an ulcer.
I can't imagine why any stage manager would say that about you.
But anyway, the national tour of Robert Bridegroom was going out that particular year, and she liked the work that I had done in the stock production, and she suggested that I be seen by the folks that were going out, and I auditioned for it and got it and had my equity card and was suddenly in professional theater and was touring. And when I got back, it was the natural progression was to start auditioning. And, you know, I started booking regional theater jobs. And, you know, I say to young kids now is that, you know, the more you can, no matter where it is, the more you can work with people and the more they like what you do. You never know when you're going to meet them 5 years from now and they're going to say, I want you to be in my show. Or, and that's how it happened for me. And it's just I got to know more people and work with more people. And the next thing I know, I was doing my favorite year at Lincoln Center. And suddenly I was in a Broadway show.
Do you remember getting the call when Broadway called?
Yeah, actually, I do. I do remember. I knew I wanted to play. Of course, I wanted to play Benji Stone. Evan Pappas was playing it. And I just wanted to be his understudy. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to understudy the part, which I ended up doing. And my agent called me and said, after, I don't know, probably four auditions, said, they're going to hire you. And I was like, really? For Lincoln Center? Yes, they're going to hire you. And they're giving you the understudy. And I was like, I made it at that point.
Yeah,
you know?
Man.
It's all been downhill.
Yeah, yeah. You don't know where you are. You don't know where you are in your career, you know, at that point. But right that very second, you've made it. You know, you've made it.
Lilias?
I was in a theater company for a number of years called The Demigods. And we were taught to be proficient in singing, dancing, and acting. So when I left the company, I went to an audition that I saw in the backstage of the backstage magazines. And it was for the role of the Djinn of Sin at the New York Theater Ensemble. And I went and I auditioned and I got the role. So it was the Djinn of Sin and I was able to sing and dance and act at the same time. And I got it right up in the newspaper. And somebody called me and said they're looking for somebody to replace somebody else in the Amen Corner at the Hazel Bryant Theater. So I went to do that. And in the audience were the producers for the Wiz Bus and Truck Company. And they had the producers from the Amen Corner have me come and audition for the Wiz Bus and Truck. I got to the audition. Jeffrey Holder's there. God bless him.
We know
and,
a lot of the same people.
Yeah. And he says, where have you been? And I said, well, I was in a theater company. And so anyway, I got the role of the Dorothy understudy in the Wiz Bus and Truck Tour. And we went on a 14-month split weeks and one-nighters all around the United States and Canada.
The old split week.
Yeah, and about halfway through the tour, the girl who was playing Dorothy left, and I took over the role. And the rest, as they say, is history. I got to play Dorothy. I went from doing that to do Ain't Misbehaving. I stopped to have a baby. And then I was doing Tin Types on the road with Faith Prince and a bunch of other really wonderful people down in very racist Florida. Palm Beach was very scary for black people at that time. It wasn't that long ago. Thank you. So anyway, I did that, and I got a call from my agent that they were replacing Terry White in Barnum to come in audition. So I went to audition for Cy Coleman and Joe Layton. And I got the part on the spot. And that's where I worked with Mary Porter Hall, where I was living in Coney Island. I had a baby, and I would come in late, and she would come in, oh, God. So I would be there in time for curtain. I'd get ready, you know. But it was just that, you know, that half-hour thing. I had to really work that out.
You had a baby to deal with?
I had a baby, and I was coming from Coney Island.
You're like, I'll get there.
To Manhattan. You know, and this was before Uber and Lyft and all that stuff. So I was on the train, and you know. But that was my first Broadway show on Broadway. And it was very exciting. It was a wonderful experience. The crew embraced me. Terry White was essential. She was just such a wonderful friend to me. She showed me all the ropes, where to do the chin-ups, you know, where to go and have cocktails later. And I hung out with the crew, and they just took care of me. It was a wonderful experience, and it made me want to stay on Broadway.
And did you get to meet Cy then?
Oh, yeah. Cy and Joe were at the audition.
Oh, wow.
They were sitting in the back of the theater, the St. James Theater. And I started the audition, and I sang. And they said, okay, that's good. Now, do you know any circus skills? So I said, well, I had done a production of Waiting for Godot, all female, in a clown face and makeup, and we had to learn how to juggle. So I was juggling, and I hadn't done it in a while, so they dropped the balls, and I dropped the balls, and I said, well, it gets better. And they liked that. So they said, don't worry, you got the job. So that was, you know, back in the day when they would tell you right away,
right.
You know, you didn't have to wait until your agent.
Right. I'm wondering if I saw Barnum and it was several months into the run, and I'm wondering now if I saw you do
it. No, I took up about the year after it started.
I mean, that may be because I remember when I met Terry, I said, I don't think I got to see you do it. And it hadn't occurred to me until just now that I might have gotten to see you.
Yay.
I'll
I
have to
it.
Look. I think I have the playbill still back in my house someplace.
What was your moment leading into?
You know, I had. If you want to write musicals, there's no path. There's no reason to think that that's an actual thing. You know, because there's five people who do it. So you know, you don't. It's not like I thought, oh, I'm going to write musicals on Broadway. It just never occurred to me. I wanted to write musicals, and I thought maybe by the time I'm, you know, as old as I am now, I might have gotten something to happen. So I came to New York, and I was going to be a music director. And so I would, you know, I'd play piano for people's auditions, and I'd music direct readings, and I'd play at piano bars. And at one of the piano bars, I met Billy Porter. And at the same time I was playing at 88s, there was a group called The Tonics, and I used to play for The Tonics every week. And there was a girl named Daisy who would come and watch The Tonics, and she, every week, the minute the show was over, they would all gather around Daisy. She wasn't like their official director, but she would just sit and tell them what they had done wrong. And I thought, oh, that person's valuable because I have this collection of songs that I'm writing. Why don't I ask Daisy to direct, you know, all of that. And I brought Billy in to come sing in the thing. And Daisy turned out to be Daisy Prince. And so I then got to meet Daisy's dad and sort of hang out and be part of that family. And after we had finally gotten Songs for New World up, which was at the WPA Theater, rest in peace, Hal called me and he said, listen, I've got this project and Steve Sondheim just dropped out. I'd love to talk to you about it. And I really thought, there's no world in which I'm the person you call after Steve Sondheim. That was not the way that was supposed to go. But I met with Hal, and, you know, I remember I walked into his office, and at the time you'd walk in the door, and he had 21 Tony Awards on a cabinet. And that was the first thing you saw before you walked in. And it was all I could do not to just turn around and walk right back out of the office. But so Hal started talking to me and Alfred Urey about what would become Parade. And that was sort of my really weird journey to getting a show on Broadway. And because I had come up sort of through all of those weird channels, it took a long time before I was back on Broadway again, just because, I hadn't done it with, you know, meeting a lot of agents and, you know, auditioning for producers or anything. Hal just said, no, you should do it. So it was a sort of wild ride. So if you ask if I remember the call, the minute you start working with Hal Prince, the assumption at the time certainly was, all right, that's the guy who directed Phantom of the Opera. You're going to be doing a Broadway show. And then it actually was a fairly circuitous route until we ended up at Lincoln Center. But that was the story of how I got there.
Tell me about the Tony experience. I mean, it's such a heady thing, right? And I don't know if you ever dare to dream as you're coming up through the ranks that's going to be part of your life. But what's the experience of, like, going through the day, walking the red carpet? How do you prepare? Are you present in the moment when they call your name?
I have to say it's different now. Yeah. When I did it for Bridges, it was a lot different than for Parade, because now there's a lot of campaigning and there's a whole sort of Tony season. Mm-hmm. And by the time we actually got to the awards for Bridges of Madison County, I was so burned out on all of it. And I was just, I'll say this because I'm hoping someone's listening. It took a lot of the fun out of it, because it was all, it had been nothing but like Tony Awards for months.
It's
and I was
gauntlet.
Burned out, man. So it was still a great honor to receive one. And I'm, you know, obviously I didn't throw it in the trash. I'm very, you know, proud to have it. But boy, it was a rough ride to get up there. The Parade one was, it was a much sort of, it was a purer experience. But the Parade one, what I remember most specifically about it and what matters to me most about it is that I think up until that point, you know, I was 28. And I think at that point, you know, whatever my parents thought I was doing, must have seemed absurdist, you know, because what was I supposed to? And both of my parents and my dad's been gone for a long time, but that my dad got to be there and that my mom was there, at, you know, at the, we did it at the Gershwin Theater, and that they got to be there and on television when I went up and won a Tony Award. That was, you know, whatever other validation and whatever kind of vindication that's supposed to be, what it really meant to me was that as far as my parents were concerned, they could say, all right, I guess he's doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Lilius?
I wasn't ready. I had no idea, except that, you know, when I was once on this island, I got to perform on the Tonys. People thought I was up for a Tony, but I wasn't. I got to perform with my, you know, that big number on the Tonys. And so I understood the madness when it came around to how to succeed, what was required, the extra rehearsals and all of that. But I got very nervous, and I bit my tongue. I was having something to eat. I bit my tongue. My tongue was bleeding and bleeding and bleeding. It's blood, sweat, and tears in this business. It really is, truly. But by the time the life rolled around, I knew what to expect in terms of the extra energy that you had to put into it and the madness. I call it Tony madness because you get all hyped up and souped up, and there's all this campaigning and interviews. And
a full-time job.
It's full-time, it's maddening. But I wouldn't trade it. It's one of the greatest honors I've ever received is to walk on the stage and be honored by my peers and have my mother sitting there and my children sitting there and my then boyfriend and have everybody from around the world send me flowers and notes and cards of congratulations. It was really extraordinary.
Just so you know, where I was watching it that night when you won, I also was jumping up and down and screaming for you.
Thank you.
You had me too.
It's crazy, but it's what we love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's what we love.
Yeah. I certainly would have to be honest and say that when I used to host my Tony parties in the early 90s, when everybody was gone and was cleaning up, but I would think, well, boy, what would that be like to be lucky enough to have that happen? So, I did think about it. And it sort of crept up on me in my first nomination for Spamalot because it was such a – the role was so – I mean, I've had like probably 8 lines in the entire show.
But they were good.
They were good, damn good. Apparently. They were damn good. I think I had like 8
some
lines
the
in
best.
The show. Not that I count my lines whenever I start rehearsal. And I do. Yeah. Well, it's my coverage. The song Bright Side of Life, of course, which opened the second act. But I never thought going into that rehearsal period, going into that show, that this was something that might garner some attention. So to get the nomination was pretty surprising to me. And then that whole thing with the campaigning, which I had no idea about whatsoever. And it wasn't really campaigning or called campaigning. It was you have to go to this party. Mm-hmm. You have to go to this party. Yeah. And you have to go to this party.
Yeah.
You have to go to this party.
Interview.
Yeah. They want to see you for this. And, you know,
and it's a lot. Are you able to enjoy it as you're getting kind of show ponied around?
I did. I actually would be honest and say I did enjoy it during the Spamalot one because I wasn't exhausted and I was younger. Nice Work If You Can Get It was different because I knew what to expect, and yet it like you, Jason, it wore me out going to all those parties and everything else, but carrying a much bigger role in the show.
I mean, it's a stupid thing to complain about.
And I will say that there are tens of thousands of young people who would slit your throat to be in your position.
Sure.
So never, ever take it for granted that it happened.
I mean, this is kind of a blanket question, but what are the tangible ways that you feel that having that award changes your life?
The tangible ways? Well, it helps in negotiations, God knows. It
makes
it a lot easier.
Your price tag goes up, for sure.
Well, I mean, you know, my Tony was for a show that wasn't successful, so my price tag went up a little bit. But, you know, I have to be honest with you. That's all I am on this show. The first time I won it, it mattered to my family. When I won a second time, I have actually gone back to that in my head as actually being meaningful, especially because I think my shows don't run for a long time, that feeling like that is the way that I get validation from the community is that I have those things sitting on my mantelpiece. And, you know, we can all say I don't take the awards all that seriously. And I don't take the competition of it all that seriously. But I'm very I'm very grateful to have them. So if you ask me tangibly, I think it just, I honestly do feel better that I got them.
No, that
it
I
feels
haven't.
Like it's proof that I actually, you know, I actually did it. You know, Honeymoon in Vegas, it ran, you know, for the same, like, it ran 100 performances or whatever it was, and it closed, and we got no nominations and no awards and nothing. And it was like, I have to work really hard to remember that it even happened, because I think people forgot that this show, you know, happened. It was like it was there and we all loved it, and then it was just gone. And Bridges of Madison County, it's like, there's proof. Look, there, it happened. I can show it to you. So that has mattered to me. That's more, I guess it's more spiritual than tangible, but it counts.
It matters to me, but I found that as an African-American, mm-hmm. The opportunities that are afforded to a white woman who's won a Tony are not as frequent or as abundant as they are for black actors who win Tonys. It has totally enhanced my life and given credence to my career. It has upped the ante in terms of the money a little bit. Mm-hmm. I like that part. And it's you know, it's made me a star in the eyes of people who mm-hmm. who are theater enthousiasts.
You were a star long before that Tony Award.
Well, yeah, that's true, honey. My family always tell me, you're the one, honey. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful thing to have. You know, every now and then when I'm not working and I say, oh, God, I need a gig, you know, which everybody goes through that. Mm-hmm. Your show opens and closes. Yeah. Everybody goes through that. I take out that Tony and I spin it. And I spin it. And when the part with my name and everything comes on, I say, okay, yeah, I did that. I did that, and it was good.
Tangible proof. Of
yeah, it was good, and I relish it. I cherish it. I got a lot of great friends. I was very close with Ty Coleman, and I'm really grateful mm-hmm. for it all.
Michael.
Yeah, I agree. Just to continue on that sort of vein is that it's a hard journey for everybody. For everybody. So to be able to look at it and say, I did that.
I did that.
Mm-hmm. I got that. Uh-huh. It's an accomplishment, no matter whether it's an award or whatever. It's an accomplishment that you can always lay your fingers on mm-hmm. and say, yeah, that was, I remember that was, I did that. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between saying, ladies and gentlemen, Lilias White, and saying, ladies and gentlemen, Tony Award winner, Lilias White. Yeah. It's
well, and that's recognized
right,
always.
Right.
It's kind
well,
of like. A doctor so-and-so,
right.
You might as well
right.
be.
I mean, until I'm president, Jason Robert Brown.
Of course, exactly. which is forthcoming.
And
absolutely.
I am Dr. Lilias White.
Yes.
I do have a PhD from
do you really?
City University of New York.
What's your PhD in?
It's in fine arts.
Dr. White.
Dr. White.
All right, friends, I know you love Broadway, and I can only imagine that if you're anything like me, you love a good vacation. So why not combine the two and take a Broadway-themed vacation with Playbill? Playbill Travel has been hosting the biggest fans of Broadway all over the world on incredible week-long cruises that get you up close and personal with the biggest stars of Broadway. I'm not joking. One night you can hear an amazing and intimate performance by, I don't know, let's say Tony Award winner and gorgeous human being Christine Ebersole. And the next morning you'll be going on an incredible excursion through Iceland with her. If you don't believe me, check out PlaybillTravel.com to take a look at Playbill's latest cruise up the Rhone River in France, where guests and Broadway stars had the time of their lives. Playbill Travel has three amazing cruises lined up between now and July of next year, so head to PlaybillTravel.com to book your soon-to-be most favorite vacation ever.
You all have had such incredible careers and continue to. What is the secret, or what is your kind of mantra to having a long and fruitful career in this business we call show?
You know, at the end of Prince of Broadway, we have a song that I wrote, and the song is called Do the Work. And that's what, you know, it is what Hal specifically requested, but it's such an obvious mantra for all of us who really are just in the business because we love doing this, as opposed to in the business for some other bizarre reason, like we hope to become famous or we hope to make a lot of money. You know, if you're in the theater, the only way to stay in it is you just keep doing the work. You know, you show up and you do it as well as you can. And sometimes you do it wrong, and sometimes you do it terribly, but you're always just out there doing it. And sometimes you do it and it's something you're more proud of than anything you've ever done in your life. And then you have to wake up tomorrow and do more work. Mm-hmm. And I just I just keep doing the work. That's as close to a mantra as I can come up with, you know. And then there are some days where I'm like, I'm just not in the mood to do the work, but I guess I'll do it tomorrow, you know. I can't retire yet.
Yeah, retirement is really not in my vocabulary. I think I want to be able to do this for as long as I can, and to also to teach, you know. Mm-hmm. I love teaching, so I want to do that. I think the mantra is do the work, and if you don't enjoy it anymore, then don't do it. And if you can't be nice about it, then don't do it. If you're going to be itchy with people and, you know, devaration, pull the devaration card and all that, then you need to not do that, because this is not the forum for that. Mm. So I think do the work and continue to enjoy it until you don't. And then keep, I still go to my vocal coaches, like I said, and I still try to, you know, keep up with the excellent part of it to make it right, to make it ready to go.
And you find that the joy is in the work.
It's in the rehearsal. It's in the, you know, taking apart and devouring it. And, you know, getting the words and getting the character. I like to write character biographies, you know, for each character that I do. And make that person a real, vital, living thing.
Yeah.
That's fun.
That's the fun. That's the sandbox.
Yeah. Right.
And that's what it should be.
Yeah.
We are lucky enough to do something that we love that also should be fun.
Right,
you know,
it should be fun.
When you go to rehearsal every day, and you've come out of that rehearsal saying, "I laughed my ass off today,"
yeah.
and this show is so great, and it's so much fun. Well, what could be better than that? You're not walking out of there going, "I gotta get my briefcase and go get on the train and kill myself." You know, this is a lot of fun. Yeah. The only flip side to that is, and as we all know, that it is difficult. And there are disappointments every day. And it is, how much can you take? Mm. How much can you take and get up the next day and say, I'm going to go to that audition, whether I can do it or not, whether I'm right for it or not. I have this appointment. I could blow it off, but I'm going to go.
I'm going to walk through the door.
You know, I'm going to go. And how long can you do that? Can you do it for 10 years? Can you do it for 15 years? That's a tough question. You
How
know,
long have you been doing it for?
I've been doing it for, I'm going on for my 40th year.
There you go.
Yeah.
6 years is Will Parker. what would you guys say if you had to assign one climactic high point in your careers to this point? Is it Tony? No. Is it something else?
I had to do a concert in Germany. And there were a bunch of people on the concert, other German singers who had all, and it was all going to be my work, so that was swell. It was all in German, so that was weird, but and I went and I met them all, and they were all perfectly nice. And then there was one guy who was singing a song from Songs for a New World called Flying Home, and I said, oh, who are the backup singers? And he said, oh, we weren't going to do it with the backup singers. I said, oh, well, that's too bad. This song sort of, it must be very hard to pull off. He said, no, it's true. I hoped they would have backup singers, but then it turned out that the story was they didn't want to hire any extra people to do it. And I looked at the cast and I said, has anyone done Songs for a New World? And three of the people in the cast had done it. And I said, all right, well, let's just, do you guys remember your parts? And they were like, yes. And on this stage in Germany, I sat down with four people who I had never met in my life, and I played a song I had written years before, and they all could sing what is a very intricate vocal arrangement. They all knew it because in different places, all of them had done that piece before. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is something I wouldn't even know how to experience that in my imagination. I wrote something that goes out into the world, literally the world, and people are moved enough by it that they bring it into their bodies and hang on to it, that they can call up this crazy vocal arrangement years after they've done the show. That I always think of that as like, that was a big significant moment for me.
Michael?
For me, the Tony is great. But it's a culmination, and it's a, you know, when you're doing that show, or you're doing a show and you've done it for 8 months and then the Tony Award comes along and you get it, that's great. But for me, it was going on for Evan Pappas and My Favorite Year without rehearsal. Oof. And it was one night, and it was, you're on, he's lost his voice. I had no dance rehearsal. I had no blocking rehearsal.
I had no put in.
Oof. I had no orchestra rehearsal.
Right knuckling it.
And they made the call at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday. And we did it. and I did it, and I picked up what I could along the way in rehearsal every day, but it happened, and that is still the seminal moment in my career.
Were you able to process it, or was it totally out of body?
It was a white room. Like a it fall. Was literally. I stood in the wing, and the orchestra was playing bum 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 ba da 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 bum 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 ba 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 ba. You go, and the stage manager pushed me.
Wow,
that's you.
And
he
that's
said, "That's
the last
you."
Part of the show you remember.
And something happened.
I went out there and I just started talking, and we talked all the way through the entire thing. The crew had put lines up on the stage. I was reading a line out of a soup dish.
Oh my God!
Oh yeah, it was crazy. Wow. But it was the moment still for me.
Well, you know, I was in Fela on Broadway, and I played Funmilayo Anikulapu Kuti, who was the mother of the famous activist musician Fela Kuti, and we went to Nigeria.
Oh, wow.
We went to Lagos, Nigeria, the home of Fela Kuti and the Kuti family, the home of Afrobeat. We went there to do Fela. And we were so well received. But that first night, up on the stage, and I'm singing this song, I started to sing, ra, 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 ra. And the audience, all these thousands of people chimed in, ra, 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 ra. I totally lost my breath. Mm. You know, we'd done the show on Broadway for, you know, many, many months, and that never had happened. And here we are in his home with these people, and they were singing back to me.
Wow.
And it was so extraordinary and so moving. I started to just cry. I felt the tears come, and then I said, no, you can't cry. You can't cry. Then you can't sing. So I was able to get it together and pull the tears back and sing. And because of the heat and the humidity and all those components there in Lagos, Nigeria, the voice was sitting. It was pinging.
She showed up.
Oh, baby, she showed up. She showed out. And it was that response. And, you know, when I finished the song and I walked off the stage and I heard this roar of appreciation from the people. I still get chills when I think about that moment, because it was like everything that I've ever practiced and done and wished for. It was in that moment of appreciation from the audience that they heard me and they were with me and they were breathing with me. It was incredible.
Are you in a show? I know you are. Do you want to add some Broadway flair to your school or community theater production? Well, Playbuilder lets you build your very own Broadway quality playbill program. Each playbill is fully customizable for your production. Dates, song title, cast names, production credits, artwork, and even advertising. It's a great way to promote your show, raise money for your organization, and create a professional, printable program. Save valuable time with Playbuilder Express. Select from thousands of pre-populated programs in our database and simply begin to customize your production's playbill. Visit Playbuilder.com to learn how you can create your own playbill today.
One of the things we like to do here on the Broadway Cast is reach out to people doing community theater projects all over the country. But this time, we're going to reach out to somebody in the theater community.
Hello.
Hello. Is this Marissa Jarrett Winoker?
Yes, hello.
Hello. You're on the Playbill Presents the Broadway Cast.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Marissa.
Hi, Marissa.
You're on the line with Jason Robert Brown, Lilias White, and Michael McGraw.
Oh, hello, everybody.
So it's a delicious Tony.
Oh, she put on her Marilyn Monroe for us.
Yeah.
She did. Marissa, we're talking about all things Tony today, and we've kind of talking about the experience of the day and what it is to win and what it means to you. Can you kind of take us through your experience?
I had a show the day we had the Tony Awards. Mm. I don't know if everybody else did. We actually did a full show, then got on a bus and drove across town and put on a dress, then got out of my dress, put on my costume as Tracy, got back out of my Tracy costume, put back on my dress, and then sat in the audience. I mean, it was like, I literally changed in and out of my costume of Tracy like four times that day. I might as well have just done it all in my Tracy costume. I don't know why. What? I had to change.
Was it exhausting?
Oh, it's so exhausting.
I know. It's so hard to be famous.
It is so hard. I mean, it's like the whole month is exhausting. It's all wonderful and crazy. Yeah. And there's luncheons and galas and dinners. But no, I mean, the day is, it's surreal. I don't remember even the whole day. I remember at like 12:30 at night leaving a hotel going like, what just happened? You know,
well, that's happened to me too, but yeah. Nothing with the Tonys.
That wasn't for the Tonys.
That'll be after our post-show martini. How would you say that Tony has changed your life, Marissa?
You know, I think like growing up, it was my dream. It was my goal. I mean, that was like all I wanted to do was be on Broadway, let alone, you know, get an award for it. But it definitely just for me took that like, you know, oh my gosh, winning the Tony Award. It didn't change my life in the sense of, you know, it didn't change my career. I live in Los Angeles. Nobody even cares out here. But with, it changed my whole, you know, I achieved something that I had set out to achieve. It was definitely for myself, you know, and for my family, and both my parents were alive to see it. And, you know, it definitely is one of those things that I'm like, okay, if I do nothing else in my career, if I never book another job, I at least have that for myself.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us, Marissa. We love you very much.
It. That's all you want from me.
I mean, you can sing a number if you want.
Jason Robert Brown would like you to sing a song.
I'll have to check with my phone book. Thank you so much, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, love.
Bye, Marissa.
Enjoy L.A.
What if you could give any piece of advice to young people, what would you tell young writers?
I tell the young writers the same thing I tell the young performers. You have to want to be good. You have to want to be good every day. That today's version of good is different than yesterday's version of good, and you have to keep working towards being good. You don't have to even worry about being great. You don't have to worry about being perfect, but you have to be good. And if you wake up in the morning and you're like, I don't even have it in me to be good today, then just take the day off. You don't have to. That's all right. But if you're going to show up and do any of this, you just have to want to be good at it. You may not succeed, because God knows good is not for granted, but you have to want that thing. And constantly wanting to be good, I think you will keep striving and you will keep wanting to move forwards, because you're just like, no, I mean, I was good at this thing, but I wasn't good at that. And so then you're going to move up and try and figure out how to get good at that other thing. And then you'll see something else over here. And you're like, oh, you see, I was good at this, but I wasn't good at that. And you're going to just try and keep just trying to be good. I don't know. That's all I've been doing for, you know, however many years I've been doing this. I just try, and if I'm going to bother doing it, I want to just do it well.
I like that.
I would say stay close to your faith, whatever your faith is. Say your prayers and do your rituals, whatever it is you need to do. Do that and stay close to your divine connection, the connection with the divine, with that untouchable, unseeable power. Drink water. Say your prayers. Drink water. Save your money.
Save your money.
Somebody told me that. I didn't listen, but, you know. Save your money and enjoy yourself, because it's later than you think. My grandmother would say, enjoy yourself, baby. It's later than you think. Nobody knows what tomorrow brings or how long we're going to be here. So do your best. Say your prayers. Drink your water. Wind it up and push it out there.
I like it.
And Michael McGraw. I agree. It's do the work. But have fun. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy yourself every day.
Yeah, it's too long a ride
not
to.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to enjoy yourself and have fun. But you also have to put in the hours. And I also tell them to start developing what I call the I'll show you attitude. Because doors get closed. Mm-hmm. And you know, when that door gets slammed in your face, you have to say, I'll show you.
Yeah.
So you can come back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lastly, tell the people who are listening out there where they can find you next. What's up next, my friends?
I'm going to make Lilius do one of my shows at Subculture.
I hope so.
I'm coming to Subculture.
If we can be the catalyst for that.
So that'll happen soon. Well, I've got Prince of Broadway going on now. I think that's the only thing in the near future that I know about, so that'll keep me busy.
I have a show coming to the Paper Mill.
That's right, you do.
Yay. It's called Halftime. Mm-hmm. It's based on a documentary and a true story called Gotta Dance. It's on Netflix. I'm also appearing on Netflix in a show called The Get Down.
Yeah.
So that's on Netflix right now.
What are your dates at Paper Mill?
I don't know. Next year, next spring.
Okay.
It's next spring. It's on the website.
Okay, cool.
On the Paper Mill website.
And you put your dancing shoes back on.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm playing a senior who's doing hip-hop, along with Andre DeShields and Georgia Engel. Oh, thank you. And a host of wonderful people. What else? I'm going to be in San Francisco at the Venetian Room next month, September 22nd, I think it is, doing a tribute to Ella Fitzgerald.
Mm. Oh, wow.
What else?
You got a lot.
I try to keep it moving.
There you go. Yeah.
And we're doing a production of Texas in Paris in Texas in November, I think it is. Yeah, so if you want to know any more, call me. And if you need me, I'll sing.
555 Lilius.
I sing weddings. I don't do funerals and memorials too much, but yeah, but I'll do weddings. I'll do birthday parties.
I will be next week. I'll be on a golf course in any golf course in New Jersey for a week. I'll be eating lobster and drinking champagne. Mm. And then I go into rehearsal Monday for the Honeymooners that will play at the Paper Mill Playhouse from September 29th to October 29th.
Then on to Big Broadway.
Come see it and, yeah, send your support.
Thank you so much. This has been an incredible season finale for us here at the Broadway cast.
All right, congratulations on your first season.
Thank you very much. This has been a wonderful experience, and I am such a huge fan of all of you, and thank you so much for being here and sharing your insight and time, and I just love you.
Thank you.
That's season one, my friends. Make sure you tune in for season two coming up. September 12th is our first episode back. And get out there and have a great show.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Everyone likes applause. Hey.
Make sure you don't miss a single episode and subscribe to us on iTunes. And now you can listen to Playbill Presents the Broadway Cast on Spotify.
And while you're at it, follow us on all social media platforms at the Broadway Cast.